I'll whoop your ass.
Glorious. Hulk Hogan, Hollywood Hulkster, whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast. I'm Oliver Newman, author of A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, which are both available on paperback and Kindle on Amazon now. And I'm absolutely ecstatic to be joined tonight by Pro Wrestling Subjective's Steve Valentino. Hi Steve, how you doing?
Just the fans. I'm good, thank you. How are you, Oliver?
Yeah, I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, you've took your chill pills today. That's very good.
Yeah, man. Are we made it? Are we going? We're good. Is this working this time, right?
God, I hope so. We've tried six times. We've tried recording off Skype. I'm going to tell the story, Steve. I don't care.
Go for it, man.
Yeah, we've tried recording off Skype.
It's been real.
It's been a struggle. We've probably had a better chat off air than we're going to have on air. Well, actually, that's probably a bit harsh.
I don't know.
And
we'll try.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, me and Steve go way back in professional wrestling. To the wonderful time that was 2007, to the wonderful place that was Wolverhampton, and to the dream tag team British wrestling Midland match between Steve and the metrosexual Danny Devine and Dan Ryder and Marcus Cool. And because it wasn't taped, I've documented it in my book, and Steve, well, he kind of lived the experience. But
yeah, man. It's definitely still, to this memory, one of the best matches I've ever had. I'm glad that you were there to, like, to document it, because otherwise I'd feel like I'd, like, glorified it in my head too much. But it was just one of those days. It was where like everything, you know, you hear people talk about it, and it's just one of those days where everything clicks and everything. All four of you are on the same page. You're all on the same rhythm as well, and that's so important when you're in there and you've got that chemistry with someone. Because we all had a history with each other, and then we were able to bring that into the story and stuff. And that's what made wrestling. For that company, that's loud. Made wrestling for that company worth it, because it was exactly what British wrestling sort of was at the time for a lot of people. It was people who had no clue and no right running a company, but they got hold of a ring and went, "Well, let's just do some wrestling," and then they get some other people who were desperate to get in the ring, and then they go, "Oh yeah, come and pay me for your training." And then, you can't see this, but I'm doing massive air quotes around that. And then they'd have these little, you know, the little jabroni kids on here, and bless them, they're just trying to follow the dream. They're just getting taken advantage of by someone who thinks that they're a promoter, and that's it's just horrible. But it's just why, that's why, you know, now, God damn it, it's glorious. Oh, glorious. See, I wish I said broken. It was broken, but now it's glorious. There you go. That's the podcast.
That's the podcast, isn't it, really? That's a soundbite we can take to the bank. That's brilliant, Steve. You looked into that, but you managed to pull it off. It was superb.
I fell into it, but then, you know, come out of it smelling the roses.
Oh, absolutely. I want to say at this point, though, you know, in terms of promoters and stuff, obviously I wasn't behind the scenes, but Matt Stark, I thought, was fantastic for for me personally, he believed in me and my writing, and he helped me out from like an expenses perspective, and you know, wasn't charging me a ticket because he saw that I was trying to publicise British wrestling. Yeah. So he was one of the best for me, in all honesty, Steve.
He was a lovely guy, and it was him at first. It was him and this other guy, Felix Thorne. Now, unfortunately, because Matt had been was new to it, was completely new to it. This other guy, like a lot of people, just span him this wonderful tale of where he'd been and what he'd done and all this. I wrestled in America and I wrestled here and I did this. It was just bollocks, you know. It was nonsense. I remember I turned up, now bear in mind I'm 16 at this point, right? I turned up at 16 at their training, right? And I think Edwards, who think wrestles still, Luke Edwards, I'm sure he still wrestles. Anyway, he was there as well, so he hopefully can sort of attest to this as the story. So I got there, and they started telling us to do some rolls and do some bumps and do some stuff. Now, I'm 16, there's a few grown men there, and this guy is running the training, or doing his version of running the training. And I was like, that's just wrong, though. Like, that's not how you do that. And I was like, okay, and I wasn't rude about it, as wasn't as rude as that sounds like I was. But I was just like, oh, mate, I've been trying to do this, and it kind of means you can do that. Like, I think it was just a drop kick. And he was like, oh, yeah, that's really good, that. I was like, oh, my God. Oh my God! Oh, right, okay. And then, when I saw this old, he wasn't even that old. He just looked terrible. My friend, run this man down. Well, all the lies probably weighing on his shoulders, right? So, Jackass is there, and he was like, right, here we do. We're gonna do arm drags, and it was oh man, he's like. His snap on the arm drag had about as much pace on it as like one of those pushing revolving doors with an old lady pushing it. Like, he was just like slow round, didn't get enough twist or torque, and it was dangerous for the person taking it. So, and I'm sure it was going to be me, so I was just like, I think I might show you how to do that one probably as well. And then after like two moves, I was running the training when I was 16, so that tells you what this company was. Matt, I loved that. I still talk to him now, actually.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, every now and then we just happen to have a little chat and stuff over, you know, he's all Greenpeace-y and vegan and stuff. I think he's vegan anyway. He's all Greenpeace-y and stuff. So every now and then we're like, yeah, the world's so polluted. Oh! And we get all excited about how we're trying to save the world. And then we just chat like that. But he was lovely, but it was just...
Top man.
Yeah, I'd say so, man. I really liked him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That kind of person... Like, obviously, he was, you're saying, a bit inexperienced at the time, but that kind of person is someone you want in professional wrestling, or honestly.
Absolutely. I mean, I don't want to get too tropical, but I'd take a person like him over a lot of other people who've been quite prominent in British wrestling. So,
oh, absolutely.
I'd much rather be surrounded by good people who are a bit... bit inexperienced and a bit just sort of bit heavy on the passion and a little bit less on the education, and they just need a bit of balance, because you can rein that in than having it full of just egotistical assholes who are taking advantage of people. So definitely in the good column was our math.
But in terms of like heavy on the passion, Steve, we wouldn't be doing this podcast if we both weren't heavy on the passion of professional wrestling, would we?
Absolutely.
So yeah, I'm going to try and keep this structured a little bit, but...
Good luck, mate.
Yeah, I know,
I'm very good at that.
Based on the stuff you just said, I want tickets to your stand-up show, in all honesty. I was almost crying with laughter with some of the things you just said.
Yeah, mate, you should come on. And this happened, right, the thing is, there's a lot of things that happen to me that I can only tell to, like, a wrestling audience, so... I don't want to go to, I'll tell you, Oliver, it's fine. Right, I don't want to get too explicit on the podcast, but I was...
No, let's not do that.
No, exactly, so I won't do that. But
let's keep the stories PG.
Exactly, right? So that's, but then, like, so there's, and obviously with my character, I do, like, you know, it's a pirate, it's kid friendly, and that's what my shows are, and that's what I want them to stay as.
Absolutely.
But there's also this whole other side to me that I definitely get to explore when I do my stand up and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's like, I really would like to find a way. Like, obviously, look at Dream and B, obviously, not just for meeting them, but, you know, there's a lot of older comedians, older wrestlers that then turn comedian.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, a dream for me would be supporting them, because I can do all my very specific wrestling stories.
Yeah.
That are all, you know, for the more adult audience.
Yeah.
I can't, I mean, and like, there's just jokes that people in, only in wrestling will they get, you know what I mean? And I would love to do that one day.
Yeah, well, like I said, Steve, when people listen to this podcast, and especially the beginning, if they're not laughing as hard as I was, you know, I've never laughed as hard as that during a podcast, so congratulations for making, you know, you being the first.
True. That's what makes it funny.
Oh, it was, you know, it was British wrestling at the time, I guess, yeah. You know what I mean? I was,
that's for a lot of people, yeah.
You know, I was publicising it and making it, trying to be the very best it could be. And I have no doubt the in-ring action was up and on par with, you know, the Americans, the Japanese, the Mexicans, the Canadians. Otherwise, I wouldn't have written about it.
Yeah.
You know, the behind-the-scenes stuff is behind-the-scenes stuff. I never wanted to be involved in that, you know, when I was offered to go backstage and stuff. I'm a wrestling fan. I want to sit in the audience and I want to take in the shows and write about them and kind of go from there. So,
so the minute you know the back, the minute you have a sort of perspective from the back, I always feel like it's a front perspective. That's what I really like. I really think that's an apt and accurate name for like that, as a sort of moniker as well, like that. So the minute you have a perspective of what's going on behind, you can't not be influenced with the way you think about things, the way things are presented to you. Like, if you know what's going on in the back, then you can't help but feel it. That's why, like, I do get some people who present themselves, like, even just, like, sort of online and stuff as well, when they're trying to portray one version of themselves to the paying audience, but then they know full well that that person is going to then add them on Facebook, and then they sort of have no... They don't ever think about, maybe I don't need to be posting all of this that completely contract. I'm not saying that you have to have like one performer Facebook and one one wrestler, like one real person Facebook. But like, you know, I see it a lot when people are posting things. I mean, Danny Devine was one of the worst for it, you know. He's like out there trying to be a bad guy, but then, you know, after shows, he's like, "Hey guys, love you all." I was like, "They're never going to boo you because you're just a lovely man." Like, pretend to be a bad guy in your real life, and then, like, or just something slightly, because that perspective that the fans who are just in the room with him when he's a wrestler, they'll boo him. But then when it follows afterwards and they have a perspective of him outside of it, you can't boo that man. You can boo such a lovely man, you know? Like, it's really difficult. I think a lot of people don't realise that there needs to be those lines, I think, sometimes.
But that's even come from him, though, from conversations I've had with him, that he was like, oh, you know, imagine like The Undertaker being on Twitter or something like that, as opposed to like The Undertaker's aura would be gone because he'd be, you know, be tweeting along. And so it's quite interesting and ironic that the person you're talking about in that instance is Danny Devine.
That would be amazing, though. How isn't a fake Undertaker Twitter?
Oh, there is.
Is there?
There's fake Undertaker Twitter, I'm sure.
Got the wrong whipped cream, Tombstone the bitch, you know what I mean? Like, that'd be awesome.
You know when we were saying keep it PG, Steve?
Oh, yeah, sorry. Can you beep me out?
No, I can't beep you out. What? How much money do you think this podcast has?
I don't know, can't you just go back and like tweak it or something?
Yeah, probably.
I won't say it again. I'm sorry to anyone who's listening, I won't swear again, I promise.
You know,
I get a bit excited, you might have noticed.
don't be breaking promises on me, Steve. I don't like it when that happens.
I promise I will do my very best to not do that again.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. So, promise. Yeah, back to somewhat structure.
What were you talking about?
Yeah, that, it's fantastic. Like I said, it's a conversation between, you know, two friends who've known each other for the longest time, so it's all good. But yeah, just question wise, what is your first memory or moment of professional wrestling? When did you come across it, and what were your thoughts on it as you did?
It's hard to pinpoint it down to one specific. The clearest one I've got, I think, I don't know why I remember the day, but I'm sure it was a Saturday morning, and I'm sure it was when I was, I feel like I was about three, maybe a little bit older, but not much more. It's one of my first memories, actually. And I remember, and it wasn't even any wrestling, it was Sting when he was blonde-haired and bodybuilding and ripped. And I was just him cutting a promo. And he was like, I can't remember what he said, but he just had the face, mate. I think, you know, the same reason like his little Kane and, you know, the fake, like, LOD. Like, it just was like, what is this? Like, because you love the like cartoons and the colourfulness of it. But I think what I connected with was the fact that this was definitely an actual person, like this, and he looked like a superhero. He looked like, and he was all face. People don't have face paint in normal life, and I don't think I'd seen anyone with hair like that. Like all of the things that I was experiencing when I first saw Sting were the first time I was experiencing all of those things, and what it culminated in was absolute excitement. And then my cousin loved wrestling as well, so me and him used to watch it.
Can I ask? Sorry, one second, Steve. Can I ask how you saw WCW when you live in the UK?
I have no idea. So that's what I don't understand, because it was definitely Sting. Because so I don't know if there was like a tape or something. I don't know. It's either that I watched it somehow, or I had a weird dream about Sting when I was a child.
So what year was this?
Either way, I'm pretty destined to be a wrestler, I'd say.
Yeah, I think you are.
If it turns out that I've completely fabricated this thing, and the truth is that at 3 years old, Sting came to me in a dream when I had no possible way of knowing who or what Sting was.
That's apart like, from being like in the police.
Genesis of a wrestler story, that is. That's wow.
That's one for your stand-up comedy, that is, Steve, in the future.
Wow. So, man, I've got the phone crazy now. I'm going to have to do some research.
But you're saying you were three, so, you know, what year is that? Maybe that kind of puts things...
92.
Yeah. I'm struggling to see how you'd see a WCW on UK TV. You might have saw a tape, Steve. Otherwise, it's got to be a dream.
Maybe.
If you ever meet Sting, you're going to tell him this story.
Oh, God, 100%. I mean, like, I was having dreams about you when I was a child. He came to me like a prophecy. Like, what the f*** are you on about? Go away. Like, all right, super fan. I was like, no, I'm a wrestler too. I swear, I'm a pirate. All right. You go away.
Okay. So yeah, moving swiftly on.
Yeah, please.
What was the match or the moment that made you a fan?
Oh man, I just had some crazy dreams when I was a kid. what was it? I don't know if there was one. I can't think of one specific moment where I like it wasn't like a turning point. It was just like a gradual thing where it just got more and more available to me, I guess. So like the more my cousin like sort of gave me tapes and stuff, it was all WWF. I was so pleased. I'll work it out.
I hope you do, Steve.
I'm going to be at the gym just running on a treadmill just trying to work out. It's just gradual, I think. Whenever me and my brother used to play wrestling, I was always something similar to The Rock. So that was definitely one of the key things, I think, that I gravitated towards. was with him, but it definitely wasn't. I can't actually like sort of pinpoint one specific, but it was definitely The Rock. I definitely always, when we'd be in, like, you know, house wrestling, I'd always make sure there was time for a promo for my character. He was called AC Striker. That was which I got from Saved by the Bell, from AC Slater. And because in one of the episodes, AC Slater says, "What do you know what AC stands for? Abnormally cruel." And I was like, "Yep, still I'm in that one." So, and obviously, because I was playing, I like football at the time because I'm a good British boy. I was a striker, so I was AC, abnormally cruel striker, and my finishing move was kicking the guy with my football boots. So, yeah, and I'd always make a promo because I just loved how The Rock just owned just absolute brutality with his comedy, and I just loved it, man.
This might be the point that ends the friendship, Steve. What football team do you support?
Well, here's the thing. I care for you, Oliver. I don't want us to fall out. I don't want to affect it. But the greatest team in the Midlands, Aston Villa.
Oh no! Interview over.
Oh wow!
You were doing so well.
I know, but it took us so long to start it. Should we just carry on for a little bit?
Yeah, okay. We'll carry on. But yeah, going back to your, you know, The Rock, much like yourself with my brother and stuff, he was a Rock fan, so I was an Austin fan just because, you know, sibling rivalry. And, you know, going to your dreams of Sting and stuff. I remember he woke up. He was doing some sleep talking and he was like having a dream about Austin or Rock. I think it was Rock losing the title, and then he woke up and he was like, "Oh, you know, as Rock lost the title," and I was like, "Yeah," and he lost it to Austin, and because he'd fell asleep when the pay-per-view was on, because obviously stupid clock in the morning over here. So yeah, big Austin fan, just to stick it to my brother.
At least it's not just me who dreams about the wrestlers when I'm a child as well.
We're gonna have you on again in the future, and I want you to hunt down and track down that WCW tape that you watched.
I'm gonna have to.
Otherwise, you know, your sanity it needs to be questioned, doesn't it? Really.
I hope someone's listening to this going, No, it is real, Oliver, shut up. And then they'll be like, "No, Steve, you are correct, you're not crazy." But equally, there's probably a bunch of other people listening to you going, "Wow, yeah, really want to go to that guy's shows. He's crazy."
You know, in a good way, though. You're a nice person, so it's a nice kind of crazy, if it is at all.
That is the balance I'm looking for.
Yeah, so. Exactly. So what made you decide to become a pro wrestler in the first place?
If I like something, I want to do it. Like, I always look for forming. You might have noticed, Oliver, I like attention quite a lot, mate.
Yeah, I noticed that a little bit.
Yeah. And that's not just when I'm not just wrestling, that's just life. And, you know, but also, if I enjoy something, then I want to be part of it. I've always done that.
Yeah.
So that's why I do so many things now. That's why I don't have any free time, you know. Like we're doing stand-up, then I'm in a band, then wrestling and stuff.
Nice cheap plugs there, Steve.
Yeah, man. The band's called The Jacks. Stand-up comedy, The Giggle Dungeon. Just have a little Google. just fair noting. But, yeah, I just thought that it was something I loved doing. And me and my best mate were doing what we're told very strictly not to do, and we were trying it at home, and we were wrestling around and stuff, and then he found out about a training camp, which was NWA UK's training camp, and
I saw you talking about this with Tom Baker on his Talking Wrestling. I was really surprised because I'd never heard this story before, so if you want to, you're welcome to tell it again.
Yeah, happy to. I mean, we were 14 and we found out about this training camp, and it was down in St. Mary's Bay in Kent, which It took us 6 hours to get there.
Jeez.
Because it was, cause we had to get, we were, you know, 14 years, we ain't got no money. So it was like, Mark, we go. How are you paying for that? Birthday. So we coached down to London and then coached out to Kent, and then we had to get a bus from the bus station to there. Jeez. And when we got there, it was all these people, these actual adults, a few kids. Actual adults on there. I'm going to name drop a few people in a second, and
I'll be sure to pick them up.
Yeah, pick them up, people. Pick them up. And I was like, we got there, and it was mind blowing because, again, it's like you've no idea. You think like so. Also, yeah, I didn't tell you this on the on Tom Baker's one. But one of the things that was hilarious when I look back on it now, right? So because we knew there was going to be a guest trainer. And we didn't know who that was. It was a secret, it's a mystery, right? But because it was NWA and AJ Styles was quite big at the time, and he was working for NWA TNA, I was convinced he was going to be there. And then I was also convinced that what would inevitably happen is he would go, he'd be in the middle of class, and he'd look at me and go, he'd be in the ring, and then he'd be doing his talk, and then he'd go, hey, come on, kid, get in here with me, which is what happens. And then... and obviously we'd lock up and have an amazing match.
Of course.
And then he'd be like, hey, you've got it, kid. And then I'd just become a professional wrestler. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Is this another one of your dreams, Steve?
No, this was just a daydream. just a persistent fantasy of mine for about 6 weeks leading up to getting there.
Yeah.
And then we turned up and I was like, oh my God, everyone's so big. And I was like, oh wow, this is terrifying. And they were already doing stuff as well. They were already taking bumps and everyone was just throwing themselves on the floor. And I was like, what? That's a lot louder than I thought it was. Also, that looks like a mat, not a ring, which I was sure was like a trampoline, like a really bouncy give. And these guys are like on the mats on the floor, like throwing themselves down. I was like, oh my God. And so we did that. We started there. And the guest trainer was actually Jake the Snake Roberts.
Wow.
Yeah, it sounds whoa. this was through Jake's rough years. So, my only interaction with him was he walked through to the toilet. You had to walk past the showers to get to the toilet, and I happened to be in the shower, and Jake the Snake walked past and went, hey kid, don't wait to the toilets. And I was like, uh-huh. And I was like, oh my God, Jake's here. Ran out of the shower to like to get myself like dressed, went to go and get his autograph. By the time that had happened, he'd been punched in the face by the guy who ran it because Jake had said something a bit like crude I can't remember, he said something out of place to someone. And then the next time I saw Jake was him driving off in the car, and I thought he looked like he was crying, but I don't want to shit on him too much, but he looked like he was a little bit upset. And I was like, I just remember being stood there as he drove past with my little piece of paper, like, oh man, I missed him. So yeah, I never actually got to join with Jake the Snake, unfortunately.
Right.
But that was the plan. There was a few other people there. Wade Barrett was there. He was on his first camp.
Oh wow!
Yeah, he was called the Pinnacle then. I've got a DVD somewhere of him cutting a terrible promo, calling himself the Pinnacle. And then I will hit you with the pin drop, because that was his finishing move at the time. And there's a few other names on there that were there, but I'll save them for the next time I'm on.
Oh, well, fair enough. I met Jake the Snake at the NEC. I think it was during the time that you were staying as well. But just, you know, this is a legend of professional wrestling, you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
He was, you know, the snake bite on Macho Man from, you know, my childhood years and stuff. So being able to meet such a legend was a wonderful experience, even though it was only for a, you know, quick handshake and a photo and stuff, but it was still pretty cool. Still shocked to the core that you went to NWA Hammerlock, and the process that you had to put into place to get there and back is quite shocking, really. So, so you went from there, and, you know, do you want to talk about your early career? You know, how'd you get started in the Midlands scene? And
it was pretty much the same as, I mean, after that was like the really exciting start. And then we just found a training camp, like a weekly training up in Briley Hill, Future Championship Wrestling. Unfortunately, that was again, there's a another example of the state that British wrestling was in at the time, I think, really, for in terms of people taking advantage of people. It was, I'd turn up every week. There was a few guys who'd bump me around. I just really, it was fine. You get shown stuff, but there was no care put into the development of the talent. So there was no, here's your progression. Here's what we want from you. Here's what you need to work on. It was turn up, do this. Oh, you didn't do that very well. Do it this way. Okay, cool. See you next week. Which just, it's just a shame because like I've spent like 18 months going there. So you add that money up, you know, that's a pretty penny. And the guy put me on the first show, like a trainee battle royal. Then I was like 3 months later, I was in a tag match. Then I did a few more shows, and then it was just like, he just didn't even bother. So, and that frustrated me. And it's also like that feeling then, I think has stuck with me so much that that's what drives me with the way I am now, in terms of making sure that there's a focus put on people, and that people aren't just turning up to do things for the sake of it, that people know that they're important. Because every time I'm taking a bump, that's one bump off my bump card that I won't ever get to take again. You know, you haven't got an infinite amount. No, a lot of people think that they do, but you don't.
Yeah.
So when I'm turning up and I'm being bumped around by these big bullet, like, especially at that place, it was one of those, there was these older guys, these big, fat, overweight, you know, we used to be, whoa, let me tell you, bye, kid. Hold on, mate. Look at the state here. And I used to be able to take advantage. And it's funny because I had a moment with one of them the other day, and he used to, like, beat me. This is about me, you know, like, breaking me in and stuff making me pay my dues. And I get it. You've got to check that people are tough on that, because it's a tough business and it's a tough
absolutely.
Job. But when these people are just fully taking advantage for their own egos,
it's not cool.
And I was in the ring the other day, and this guy has just come back, and he's like, he's a mess, and he looks terrible. And he was like, he wanted to do something with me. He wanted to run his knee into the corner and show this guy how to do it. And he went, oh, Steve, get down in the corner. And I was just like, nah, mate. And he was like, what? I said, I'm not a trainee anymore, kid. Like, and he was just like, what? I said, you don't get to tell me what to do, mate. I'm not your little bump machine anymore. And he was like, what? No, I was just messing. I said, yeah, we was messing. But I still ain't doing it. So why don't you get down and I'll knee you in the face? And he was like, and the look on his face, like, you know, because I'm a big lad now compared to what I used to be. When I
Beast Valentino, I'll call you.
Yeah, man, Valentino ain't lying down for no bullies, you know. So,
No. I said Beast Valentino. Sorry, Steve.
Sorry.
I said Beast Valentino. I'll call you.
Oh, Beast. Yeah, I'm getting there. We're trying.
We've reached the half an hour mark, Steve. But I've got more questions if you can bear with me.
Yeah,
we're good. Okay, cool. So we've talked briefly about your early career, and we've talked about that amazing tag team match from Legends Wrestling League. Is there any other highlights you have to share with the fans about your early career?
My early career, I mean, not really. There's because there was some stuff, and then there's some sort of like the moments that I did have are all like so tied to a lot of the sadness that time as well.
Yeah.
So a lot of those moments, you know, and the reason that I stepped away from it all, it's all quite tied. So it's hard to talk about one without talking about the other. So
that's fair enough.
Yeah. So I'm just great right now. The main thing is I'm happier now than I've ever been with it. So I'm really glad that I got over all those things. Not over them, but so I just stopped letting them dictate and control me. And be able to step back into it and be able to pick it up. So I was so glad that you were there as well when I, when I came out. Like, that was amazing for me to have people still remember me from back in the day, and then to have, like, to see you. I was just like,
I was like, Steve, who? Who's this guy?
Yeah, who's this little noob?
No, it was wicked seeing you come back. And like you said, you've you've maintained it. This is the Steve Valentino that I remember from 2007, and this is why the conversation has, passed us by in terms of half an hour. So, but it's all good, and obviously we spent a lot of time getting this on the air in the first place. So you're looking at an hour probably, but I appreciate your time, and it's always good. So.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the punk rock supernova Eric Emanon, the leader of the IndyCard Mafia, the voice of the free world, and you are listening to Broken But Glorious.
Probably going to go into the wrap-up question, Steve, because I know you're a busy man. Pro wrestling subjective. You took over the reins there from the metrosexual Danny Devine. What's that been like for you, really? From trainee to wrestler to promoter.
Yeah, well, it's been interesting. It's been a challenge as well. It wasn't something I really wanted to do, to be honest. It was something that I was wanting to be involved with because I wanted to support Dan. And then Dan was like, "No, it's too much for me." I was like, "But we just okay, yeah, sure, okay." And then luckily I've got a really good support network around me who are helping. Luckily because I've done the jobs I've done. Like a lot of management jobs, like but in bars as well. So I've dealt with the entire spectrum of people. It's taught me a lot. And also, I just love wrestling. And the most important thing for me is that I know how important it was for me as a kid having these experiences of these wrestlers and what that did for me, and I know how important it is for those people who come to the shows and how much of a responsibility we as promoters, we as wrestlers have to that audience. It's so important for those people who are coming, they've paid, they've worked hard for their money and they want to give it to us, and then in return all we've got to do is go out there and do what we love doing.
Exactly.
Okay, sweet.
It's a pretty sweet gig.
Amazing. You know, so then when people make it about them, and make it about their own egos, and I know, like, people think, you know, the way that I carry myself as I'm a very confident person, I believe, but mainly just because of belief, I know that I can do, if I set my mind to it, it can happen, I know that, and so sometimes that can be misunderstood by other people who maybe don't carry themselves with that same belief, and they can maybe think that it's an ego, and on some level it is, but when people take their ego and they make it about them and not the fans and not the show, that's what I'm completely against. And what I have found is that I've had to get rid of a few of the bad elements from backstage, who didn't quite share the same mentality as I wanted and what we wanted for the fans and for the company and to grow and that backstage feeling. And so there's been a lot of lessons learned. I found a whole new way to deal with my stress. Like, I used to be a lot. I found a way to to relax and center myself and know that I can deal with it all. And I've got really good people around me that really want to grow the product as well, and they're invested in that, and that same belief and that same philosophy that I share with them, that I give to them, they then also like share it as well. So it's been really good. It's been really exciting, and it's just been nice to see people who maybe don't always get a focal, like a big spot on a show, still have a smaller spot, but know that it's going somewhere, and how different that makes their attitude to it. And it's just been really rewarding, like incredibly rewarding. That's been one of the biggest thing, I think.
So from a pro wrestling subjective, was you a part of the debut show way back when?
Yeah, I was on. So what they had plans for the first show, and then that fell through. And then they had the plans, then they launched the belt, the Pro Wrestling Subjective title,
yep.
Championship, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. All the above.
Yeah, all of them. And it was between, and then that was like a small tournament. And I actually lost to who is now the champion, Jesse Jones. I lost to him in the first round of that.
Not a bad person to lose to.
Yeah, not bad at all. Rematch is very much due. We're itching to get in the ring together again, so that's definitely on the cards. And that'll be an absolute belter because we were both, you know, quite in our infancy, really. I know I did it before, but coming back, still nervous, still fumbling around, not really feeling like I knew what I was doing. And now I'm like, yeah, I'm good, I'm ready. But yes, yeah, so I was involved with that, and then I was, and then by the time the first show came around, I was much more involved. I was on. I can't remember what I did on the first show actually. A lot's happened since then, Oliver.
I'm an older man.
I don't even remember. I'm making up memories about Sting, so I don't know what happened about the first show, mate.
In all honesty, I'm older than you, so you've got no excuse.
All right, I apologise. I'll Google it now.
Yeah, yeah. but yeah, just going back to what you said before about carrying yourself and, you know, being wanting to be the centre of attention and stuff like that. The only look at me thing that I do in life is about professional wrestling. So yeah. I obviously approach it in a different way, but I don't think you're, you know, you think you're above it and stuff. I think the confidence. You know, the confidence is there because you're good at what you do, and you have to have that belief. And I've kind of realized that myself. You know, obviously I've been writing for 13 years, so you've got to have that belief in yourself. Otherwise, you know, people aren't going to take you seriously. Because when I stepped away from wrestling, I was kind of the only person writing about British wrestling, and now I've come back to it. Every man, woman, and dog seems to be writing about it, so it's a whole different ball game for everybody. I just thought I'd add that in from before.
No, sure, you're completely right. The main thing that I've always said is that if you don't believe in yourself, then why would anybody else
believe in you? Like, yeah,
you can't expect someone to bank on you or believe in you if you're not doing it for yourself. You've got to convince other people, man. Like, it's got to come from you first. Like, that's the thing that happens with a lot of guys when they're just starting, like, and they'll be like, when they're in the ring, the mistakes that will happen will be because they don't trust their instincts, or they haven't been, maybe they haven't been taught how to trust their instincts. I think that's a very important thing.
But you've
got to sell yourself. Like, if you don't believe, then no one else will. And then why should they? You know, like, what? You've got to relax the people. You've got to make them know that they're in safe hands. I don't want to go out. Like, that's why I try and go to every fan that I can when I go out there and be like, yeah, man, so let's put it together. Let's have this party. Let's go do some wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I understand where you're coming from. I mean, you know, from the way you speak, Steve, you know, you should be a trainer in the future. I think that's something you would excel at.
I'd like to. It's definitely something I'd love to do, but I've still got so much more to learn before I can even... I could say do character work with someone, and I could talk about like maybe some of their selling and stuff. But in terms of just technician in the ring as well, I've literally just started training again. I've just gone to get back into being that technician in the ring and stuff, and getting myself back into that sort of, so it's all second nature, and that I'm just getting my engine up, because at this point I could do. I would love to do training eventually. I would love to train someone eventually. But I've got a lot further to go on my journey before I can start telling people and teaching people, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. But you kind of approach it in the best way. It's not going to be about the money for you. It's going to be about the experience and helping people.
Absolutely.
And that's why you'll be fantastic at it when you choose to do so.
It's very kind, Oliver.
Yeah. And you didn't have to slip me a fiver, you know, to get that compliment.
I'll send you some bitcoins instead.
Oh, wicked. No, they've gone down in price, so that's not good for me. And I'd like to mention at this point, I'm missing the Birmingham City versus Huddersfield match for this interview.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, cheers for that, Steve.
So don't worry, I won't keep you. Wait a minute, I was going to say, I won't keep you too long. No, that's not what's happening, Steve. This is...
So
I'm the interviewee, not the interviewer.
I've only got 10 questions. You've made it last 45 minutes, mate.
Yeah, I do ramble, mate. Sorry about that.
No, this is fantastic stuff. It really is. So my next question is something of of sad. It's a sad topic, really. Although we could laugh and joke about it back in the day. It's about the career of the metrosexual Lanny Devine coming to an end. When he was kind of in and out of wrestling in the early 2000s and stuff, we kind of laughed and joked along with him that he's had more retirements than Terry Funk. But in this situation, it's very unfortunate that his career is coming to an end. And I just want to get your thoughts on the situation, really.
It is sad. It's always sad. But like when the choice is taken away from someone, I think that's what's really crushing about it. Because this was his last little run. He knew that. I mean, he said that. As we know, Liam, he loves to come back, but this time it seems like it is like. It's just a shame. It's a shame when anyone's passion is then taken away from them. But luckily enough, with Dan being a sort of renaissance man, he's got he's got other passions as well. So you can see he's throwing himself into his writing, and I think he will still get that satisfaction from his creativity through that avenue. So that's one. He will be sitting at home and he will be like, oh, I wish I could still do it, wish I'd had that last run. But I think he was getting ready to step away from it anyway, and his focus has shifted, and he's actually, like, he's not lucky that he's retired at all. He's not lucky that he was injured, but he is lucky that he's got other passions, because I think a lot of people have one thing and that's it.
Yeah.
And that would be that would make it completely devastating. Luckily enough, Dan has a lot of other things that he does want to pursue, and he'll still be able to get that fulfillment that void that would have been left by this injury, caused by this injury, and then left from leaving British Wrestling, will hopefully be filled by his writing, and he can find success in that. I just wish him all the best. He was just always a great person to have around, just a great energy. Just a genuine person, and it's always sad when a person like that isn't going to be around anymore.
Is he going to go behind the scenes with you guys, or is he definitely just stepping away?
He's just stepping away. He's not, because the plan was this Sunday to do like a little send off for him and have a little this Sunday at the Station Hotel in Dudley. That's Sunday the 11th of February. Pro Wrestling Subjective, no more fun. Nah!
We was going to get to this point, Steve. Jeez.
Don't worry, we can get to it later, because there's no harm in repeating myself. And so we were going to do a little send off for him. I'd planned to get a trophy set of balls for him, and then get him like a little fountain pen to say, because I know this is a very symbolic gesture. I'm very aware that he's very much typing away. No one really writes a fountain pen, but just to sort of wish him on his way with it. But unfortunately, I can't make that either. So
oh,
wow. I think some of it might be that it might be a bit painful for him, just emotionally, to not want to be around it as well. I mean, he has absolutely no chance of getting back in the ring.
Yeah.
So I think he just wants to step away and start his new. Start writing his new chapter, and I think it's quite apt. So.
Fair enough. Have you got a special memory you want to share with the listeners? Do you have a favourite moment of being with the metrosexual Danny Devine, or a match of his that you've seen that you want to share with the listeners?
Oh,
it's probably going to be that tag match, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be, man. Absolutely got to be. Yeah, it's got to be that tag match. And then, I mean, like, just in general, just always having someone. I just thought of another one. Yeah, so it was AWW, and it was years ago, and this is when I was being his manager. So this is when I was bringing, again, like, I'm a pirate in real life, so I'm a pirate in wrestling. this is when I was a hairdresser, so I've been So obviously the metrosexual looks after himself, so what better thing for him to have than to have a stylist, Stefan Valentino. So Stefan was out there with him, and then we had the Playboy, Phil Bedwell was on our team, I was just the manager, and then it was RJ Singh and Nick, I can't remember what Nick's last name. Anyway, they were like it was like a version of like a Bollywood Boys type thing, and I was like being their heel manager, and I was just it was so much fun. We built this whole thing up to me getting slapped in the face, and I don't think I've gotten a bigger pop for anything than when the Bollywood guys manager, she like, I've been, you know, getting involved all the way through. It's good, the good heel should. And then I got up on the apron and stuff, and then like to distract from the pinfall, and she like came and pulled my legs down, stood there and just slapped me in the face, and I just, you know, proper panto sold it, like, and the crowd just went absolutely ballistic for it, and that was one of my favourite. That was another favourite moment, having me and Dan working together, because I remember him looking at me after it had happened, and he's in pain obviously on the floor, but he was also laughing quite a lot. Because she clocked me. It was not a wrestling slap at all.
And since we're talking about AEW, and the new general manager of 205 Live has just been announced Rockstar Spud, a man that we both know from back in the day. He's Drake Maverick. What do you make of this appointment yourself?
I would love for him to have been there in a wrestling capacity. I think he's absolutely got the ability to be doing that. Like, that's the only negative that I've got to say in it. Other than that, I'm just so proud to see it, like, him get to where he's been working for so long. Like I said, when I first went to college, I was 16, I just started wrestling, and we got asked, you know, when you do like icebreaker things, and we had to write this, I was in philosophy class, and we got asked who our hero is. And I was like, I've never really had heroes. It's not a thing that I don't know why, it's just not a thing that I've done. I've got people I like, but whatever. And I wrote this down, I still got it somewhere. I wrote down Spud, and then we had to explain why. And my explanation was, and I stand by this, and and especially having him, knowing him, I don't know, I've hung out with him a few times. I know him because he started at FCW as well, same place I did. So I was quite lucky that he was around a little bit. The reason I put it, and the reason I think he's, like, I just respect him so much, and it's all still true, that at that time, he was even smaller than he is now. Like he was, okay, so he's, what, 5 foot 2 or something? 5 foot 3. And he was weighing, like, about 110 pounds. And he used to get hate from so many people. But what he'd do is he'd go out there, and everyone would be like, a kid his size should never. I used to get told I shouldn't be a wrestler, and I've got like 8 inches on him. And so everyone would tell him he's not a wrestler, like he couldn't do it. And he was like, nah, do you know what, mate? I am going to do it. I can do it. And then he'd go out there, and even when people would boo him on his entrance, by the time they saw him do what he did in the ring, and he'd sell, and he'd make them care about him, and he'd make them believe that he could do it, by the end of it, they'd be cheering. And it was just so inspiring and so powerful to watch him just absolutely middle finger it and just go, no, I'm going to do this, and I'm not going to give up. So I wrote that when I was 6, that's 12 years ago, I wrote that he inspired, like, that was basically saying my hero is what he inspires me. And now fast forward 12 years, and this person who's from the same area that I'm from, who was told...
Same area we're from, Steve.
Well, same area we're from, yeah, but I mean, I mean, boo-boos, and same area we're from, to see him go and just constantly overcome barrier after barrier after barrier, and then go, yeah, no, I'm going to do it. He broke his neck, man. Like, he broke his neck, and he still made it, he still got it there. And I know there's all the stories about wrestlers with broken necks and stuff, but I don't know them personally, so this is the one that impresses me, right? So, like, and he's just there, and it's so inspiring to see that, like, just absolute undying belief and perseverance, and it's paid off, so it's fantastic, mate.
It's like you say, it's a great inspiration, isn't it, really? You know, I saw from the Talking Wrestling YouTube chat with Tom Baker, like I said earlier, that's you've got aspirations for WWE Impact Wrestling in the future, and you can obviously look at Spud and obviously Drake Maverick as someone who can inspire you, because if he can do it, so can you.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I've always believed that I can do anything, and then to see the proof that yes, you can. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing.
This is David Fuller, the owner of IHWE Texas Professional Wrestling, and you're listening to Broken But Glorious Podcast.
Well, in all honesty, Steve, you know, I've been to a few pro wrestling subjective shows, as you know. You know, you're getting the look. You know, I'm not saying beast just for a laugh. That's how you look. You're in-ring style. You had a fantastic match against the Judge. So, and obviously your character work has improved tenfold. So,
that was one of the great things the last two shows that I did for a different company. Spud was at one of them, and he said to me afterwards, he said that I've just improved so much and the character work's great, and I was just like, and he was just like, yeah, you did really well, and I was like, yes. And that's when Dave Mastiff was there, and he said the same. The first thing he said to me was like, "God, you're in the gym, ain't you?" And I was like, "Yeah, man, I'm trying." And he was like, "It's working, man." And that character is really good. And I was like, and the match wasn't great because of I wasn't too happy with some of the stuff that had happened. And I said, "Oh yeah, the match wasn't that good." He said, "Don't you worry about that, mate. You're clearly getting it, and just keep working on it because all that can come afterwards. But you keep doing what you're doing, and it's inspiring, and it's really nice to know that the people who I looked up to when I was starting are now looking at me and going, yeah, you're getting it, kid. So it's good.
But the key thing with that, though, Steve, is they're not blowing smoke. It really is truthful. It's truthful, and it's coming from your peers. So, that must gear you on to be even better than what you are.
Absolutely.
Going on to the next question, it's tied in with pro wrestling subjective. Just want you to talk us through a show day as a promoter. And hopefully you'll be finished by the time Birmingham versus Huddersfield is.
What time? Has it kicked off already?
Yeah, it's kicked off, but I'm hoping you'll be finished by the time the match ends.
Right, I'll do it real quick. Okay, so first of all, wake up and then genuinely decide, like, because my moods can be very up and down, as you can imagine, but I do have depression and stuff, so genuinely on show day it's wake up, be filled with anxiety, nerves and terror, work out whether or not I even want to get out of bed, and then go, don't be stupid, this is what you've been working for, we can do this. So once I give myself a little pep talk, we get out of bed, sort it out, call my uncle comes and picks us up, we get to the show, and it's I've now got to a point where I enjoy it and I'm excited by it, whereas before it was just fear. It was just, oh, what if they don't turn up? What if this person doesn't turn up? Is there going to be an audience? Oh my god, running up and down. And now it's just a case of, like, get there, make sure, because I like to plan quite far in advance, just so people know what we're working towards, so that they can be involved and invested. And so it's talk through. I always do like a little pep talk with all the guys before the shows. To make sure everyone's comfortable with what we need from them, and then make sure the camera team knows where they need to be, what we need from them as well, and then it's now a case of just enjoy. It's literally that's it. I mean, you get the fear of the doors are open. They're here. People here. Yeah, people are here. Okay, cool. Then I can relax now. You know, because you never know.
Well, you've had a snowstorm cancel the show, so you really do not know whether a show is going to take place. And before we went on the air, you said about the snow landing in the Birmingham area, and you was worried about that for Sunday. So, yeah, you're crossing a few fingers and toes, aren't you?
Crossing every with me, mate. I'm like a contortionist.
So, yeah, I saw a fantastic promo by yourself talking about Elliot Jordan experience today on Facebook, and I recommend that anyone goes to the Pro Wrestling Subjective Facebook page and sit and watches this, because it was brilliant. So you've said that, and hopefully you haven't said it all in that promo, that interview you had. Just your thoughts on Elliot Jordan experience. Just talking from a real perspective, I guess, first of all, and then if you want to promote the match, you're willing to do. You're welcome to do so.
Well, yeah, I did sort of say it all in the promo, and I meant everything that I said, which is why I try and do that with my promos. I try and bring as much truth to it as possible. He's a cool dude who's working hard. I do feel like me and him are on similar paths. We're at similar points in our career, and we're both grinding it out and working hard. Because you can like someone from a professional standpoint, and also be aware that if you didn't, if it wasn't in this environment, would we really get on? Probably not. But I respect what he's doing and what he's trying, where he's working and what he's trying to do, and I'm looking forward to beating him up. And he's looking forward to beating me up. So we're gonna we'll have a little bit of a war, and I'm looking forward to it. It's a first time ever match as well, and it's definitely like I know that we're gonna cross paths again. I absolutely guarantee that. So I'm really looking forward to it. I really am.
I was going to say, from a fan's perspective, cheap plug, Elliot Jordan experience has been tearing it up in Pro Wrestling Subjective. You've been doing the same on the opposite side of the card. So you two coming together is just a perfect storm, isn't it, really?
That's how it feels. That's definitely how it feels. It feels like we've both been bubbling up, and we've, like you said, on one side is the evil, on one side is the good. That's the kind of, and we're getting stronger, and the inevitable sort of collision. And that's why I feel like this Sunday is definitely not the last time we're going to cross paths. I think this is definitely the beginning of quite an epic saga as we develop.
And then, because you've been talking about it for the majority of the show, this was your opportunity to promote the upcoming show this Sunday, the 11th of February, is Pro Wrestling Subjective, No Fun.
You need more conviction than that. More conviction. No Fun!
Okay, and then, so why is that the title of the show?
The title is because we've booked Damien John, and he's got a great gimmick where he's the anti-funk police, and he shouts that a lot, and I love it. and he's the most sort of recognised. It just makes sense, he's the most recognised person. He's making his debut, and he's obviously got big plans. He's won belts everywhere, and I know he's coming in with that same intention. He's coming in for that. So this is the start of the No Fun era. Somewhat. So I know he's coming in. He's going in against another debuting up and coming star in TJ Sky, who has been wanting to come to Subjective for a while, and he's got a massive challenge ahead of him. And I think that match as well. This card top to bottom is I'm so excited about it. So we've got that. The Hunter Brothers are back as well, and I just love them. I just think they're one of the best teams in Europe. Obviously Brotherhood helps have such great chemistry, but they're against the usual suspects, who are all this big bullying, brutish team who are coming to smash the people up. And what better thing to do than to put two big bruisers in with two guys who can do it all, speedy, quick, and can wrestle circles around them. So can't wait to see that match. We are crowning our first women's champion. on Sunday as well, which is very exciting. Got Athena Fury versus Shauna Shea versus Bobby Rogue, and that's a match that we've been trying to settle who's gonna, you know, who's competing for that belt, and it's just been a case that these three have been the top of that division, and so it just makes sense. You put your three best out there, see who's the best on the day, and then that's how you crown your champ. So really, really excited to finally crown our first women's champion.
And then, is there any other matches you want to talk about at all?
We've got the Puma Kid, who's been tearing up in Subjective, who is taking on Disciple, who is an RWA graduate, and he's. I've wrestled him. I've clashed with him a few times, and he's just no nonsense. He's just absolutely no nonsense when he's in there, and that as a contrast to the fun loving Puma Kid. That's going to be fantastic. Can't wait for that. Of course, and then we've got our main event. We've got the finally settling in. We've got the judge who's been desperate to get the PWS the championship, finally settling it against Jesse Jones, and this is going to be. No holds barred, no DQ, Black Country street fight. The goodies that will be under that ring, there's no end to it because I've been shopping. So there's going to be also there. I was saying me and Elliot Jordan experience are going to go to war. Them two are going to go to absolute war, and I cannot wait.
It's been a long time coming as well. With obviously the different things that have been happening.
I mean, they met last March, actually, in the finals to crown the first champion. And since then, Judge has been chasing that belt.
Right.
So, he's either going to take it or Jesse's going to have to absolutely put him down. And I can't wait to see what happens.
That should be fantastic. So, yeah, just in closing, really, just what's the future for Steve Valentino, first of all?
The biggest thing that's going to be happening is me flying over to Orlando in June. That's a very exciting moment for me. So I'm going to be out there for 3.5 weeks. I've got a few things lined up. I'm going to be with our buddy Joey Osborne, and he's tearing up over there in the States, working all over the shop. So I'm going to be going over there. I just thought, do you know what? Why not? Let's do it. I started talking to a few people. A few people were interested. And then obviously, so I'm in no position to be like, yeah, fly me out for one show. So I had to make it work, had to be able to make it work from my side for them. So once I started lining up a few with a few different people, I realised that it could make it make sense for me to be able to do it. So now that that's all sorted and lined up, it's just a case of getting even more dates, and then also I get to enjoy Orlando for a little bit. So, and obviously there's quite a few important wrestling companies there. You never know who you're going to meet, do you? So,
that's true. I was there for WrestleMania 24 in 2008. Oh,
amazing.
So that's the subject matter of my third book coming out this year. You know,
I'm good
with cheap plugs as well, Steve.
Yeah, man. You want to get it done. And do you know what? What'll probably happen is I'll end up getting tickets to a SmackDown show. AJ will be in the ring and he'll look out, see me, and be like, yo, Captain. And we're like, what? And he'll be like, yeah, get in the ring, let's have a match, and then that'll be it, you know. Maybe I've never grown out of that little fantasy booking that I do, right?
I had you against Brock Lesnar for the Universal title, but, you know.
Yes, sweet. I had to do a little sparkle before that happened. Bloody hell.
It's the beast against the beast, isn't it? So
yeah, sure.
It just books itself.
Yeah.
I remember you talking once again on Talk Wrestling about working the ring crew for Progress as well in Birmingham. Can you tell us about that experience and what it was like being around a promotion as good as Progress?
It's very inspiring. Like you said, one word to sum it up. Inspiring is definitely the word. We had because I met Jim. I used to work at a comedy club and I met him there just like chatting to him. Didn't mention the wrestling. I hoped that one of the other staff would have mentioned that I was wrestling, and luckily they had. So then he was like, "Hey, how do you do like wrestling?" I was like, "Yeah, no, maybe a little bit. Yeah, sure, of course, yeah, a little bit." And we were chatting, and he said, oh, do you come into the show? And I was like, what show? And he was like, Our Progress Are Here. And I was like, yeah, cool. I mean, is it like, he said, I'll put you on the list. And I was like, oh my God, I feel special. Then I was like, I messaged him, and I said, oh, do you want me to come down and help with the ring? And he was like, yeah, sweet. So that was last July. And then this time, I just turned up. And I was like, I'd messaged him before, but then he's so busy, you know what I mean? So turned up and was, look, it was the same ring crew as before, so they were like, oh, you're right, mate. And just did that, and it's just seeing it on such a grand scale and knowing where it came from. Like, there's a reason we started from the bottom at the start of all their shows, because, you know, I've seen that development, and that, I think, have been one of the keys to the growth of the British scene.
Oh, absolutely. So,
need to be doing anything I can to help out, and also as well, the more it's just being there and being in front of them and seeing them and showing them the work ethic. It's so important, you know. You've got to show that. How is a promoter going to book you if they don't know you? You know, especially for the level that I'm at, and so I'm just there. I'm learning from watching, and also, well, you get to see the show as well, which is always great. So it was a great experience, very inspiring, and very sort of, it makes it all very reachable, in a good way. Like, it makes it all seem, again, same as Spud, but Drake Maverick. it makes it very within reach with the right amount of work.
Was there a favourite match or moment from the show you want to share with the listeners?
Yeah, right, easily. Okay, so match-wise, I don't know. Okay, I can't pick a match. Favourite moment, easily, was when they're doing the ring announcements. Mustache Mountain are in the ring. James Drake and the Grizzled Young Vets, or whatever. What's his name? Zach Gibson and James Drake are on one side of the ring. Tyler Bate. And Trent Seven on the other, doing the ring announcements just as they're doing it. Triple H calls Jim, right? Triple H himself calls Jim. Jim gets his phone out, they show it to the camera, it's Triple H.
Right.
As he goes to answer it, Trent Seven takes it off him, and this is why you gotta love me some Trent, right? Trent takes it off him, he goes, yeah, you are, mate. Yeah, yeah. Just starts, yeah, no, I'm just about to do progress. Yeah, no, just me, Tyler, yeah, yeah. Who am I working? Yeah. Oh, Zach Gibson and James Drake. Ah, yeah, I think that about him too, or something to that effect. And he's like, he's got that jacket on. What? Yeah. Ah, and he's like joking along, playing along. And then at the end, when he's putting the phone back to Jim, he goes, all right, mate, see you later. Stay cerebral. And hands it back to Jim. And then the fans start chanting, stay cerebral. And I was just like, oh my, I love this. That's what I love. It just made me laugh so much, and I just really enjoyed it. I'd like to have 750 people chanting, stay cerebral, because of an off-the-cuff mark. Like, you know, it's just great. They're really good.
Absolutely. And since you mentioned...
There was some really good wrestling on it as well.
Yeah, it's progress. We kind of, you know, we knew that before we said it. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure people will check out their on-demand service, so you don't need to hype up that, Steve. That's already selling itself, mate.
Yeah, we don't need to plug that. They are doing rather well on their own.
Yeah, just a bit. but yeah, since you mentioned Zach Gibson, have you had a chance to check out Five Star Wrestling from this past Thursday?
I haven't, not yet. Is it worth a look?
It's worth a look for Zach Gibson's performance, yeah, definitely.
Okay, he's definitely, that was someone who we would like, it's definitely on the sort of, you know, you've got your list of bigger names with the bigger money that you want to bring in, and Zach Gibson's definitely someone who's on that. On that list, that's on the whiteboard at Subjective HQ, there's a list of names, and he's right near the top. So,
and this is the last question of the evening. Dun, dun, right. Dun. And since we talked about the future for you, we've talked about Zach Gibson. The Zach Gibson question ties into what do you think the future of pro wrestling Subjectives is going to be?
Well, we've just had conversations with a, well, not conversations, put pen to paper with a new venue. Well, we will be taking, they wanted wrestling, and they wanted, they had someone get in touch with them who they had a little look at, and were like, nope, that looks like kids pretending to do wrestling. And they looked at us, and were like, yep, that looks like wrestlers, which is great, because that's what it should do. So there's, we're now branching out, so we're going to be doing the Rowley Learning Campus as well. So that's added a few more dates to the calendar this year. We're just going to keep going. Like, I want to keep getting the attendances up. They've been getting progressively bigger each time, which is great. New faces, new people, new interest. I just want to keep building the brand. That's the main thing. I think there's, I want the championship to keep growing. There's plans for that. There's a lot of things. I just want to keep consistently putting on quality shows. And then when we've got that, I've got a camera team that I'm working with now that are like sort of compiling the footage so that we can eventually get everyone up to date on the history, and then be putting out sort of just like, even if it's just a weekly YouTube show, just even just a little half an hour, someone talking in between with the clips to get everyone familiar with the product. And then we're just going to keep going. There's a few more people. We've got a few really exciting people joining us later in the year. We've got the women's division is just going to get even stronger. We've got Kat Von Cage is joining us later in the year. We've got Millie McKenzie's coming in. So those are,
well, Tom will be happy.
We've got Nightshade as well. She's joining us, which is really exciting because that's a great little roster to start things off.
Yeah, it's a great selection of female wrestlers.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to what we've already got, I mean, it's absolutely fantastic, and I can't wait for that. We've got a few little surprises coming along the way. I'm gonna keep those under my old captain's hat, and then they'll be revealed as and when, unfortunately. But the plan is to just keep consistently growing, and that is the key thing. And putting on great shows for people. That's all we want to do.
Well, you know, you've got to keep those surprises to yourself, Steve. I would be very annoyed if I was told them, I think, because of how much of a fan I am. You know, from the shows that I've seen with Pro Wrestling Subjective, the in-ring action is top class. And, you know, I think the fans have always gone home happy. So you're doing the best job you can be doing. And
I appreciate it.
I truly hope that this promotion is, you know, seen in the months and years to come as one of the ones on the forefront of Midlands wrestling and hopefully the British wrestling scene. And I wish you all the best.
Well, thank you very much, Oliver. That's very nice. Very kind of you, and I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And yeah, thank you very much for a fantastic interview. Is there any social media you'd like to plug before we go?
Steve Valentino on every platform. Facebook, Steve Valentino on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and Pro Wrestling Subjective, also same name, on all the platforms. So just get involved. So you're gonna have a little look, check out my promo about Elliot. You'll see what Oliver means, and then we're gonna keep going. We're gonna try and get a few more things out and be a bit more sort of media strong with our as we sort of progress into the new year. So there'll be a lot more content coming. So just keep your eyes on it.
Well, if you're wanting to be media strong, you've taken the right first step by getting in contact with Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast, haven't you, Steve?
Broken But Glorious! It's been a lot of fun, mate. Thank you.
Absolutely. We had half an hour and we've taken an hour and 18 minutes.
Oh, why do I talk for so long? You're going to have to cut this into about 8 different bloody parts, aren't you? Sorry, mate.
No worries. Cheers, Steve.
All right, thank you very much, Oliver. Talk to you soon. Get those hooks up.
And yeah, that was Steve Valentino, and I am Oliver Newman here at Broken But Glorious Wrestling Podcast, and I'm author of A Fan's Perspective 2016, What a Year to Be a Fan of WWE, and A Fan's Perspective, One Man's Exploration of British Wrestling, available on paperback and Kindle on Amazon now. Bye for now, everyone. Bye.